Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show, hour two on this Thursday. How are y'all? Mark Passwaters came on. He's from Rivals, and he talked about the quarterback job out in College Station. And I said, I keep forgetting about Max Johnson because I am so intrigued about what Jimbo may be able to do with Haynes King. Haynes King can fly. He is a really good running quarterback. And he's a quarterback, but he's a really fast quarterback. And Jimbo, even when he hasn't had necessarily a great fit, man, he loves getting his quarterback out on the edge and maybe across the line of scrimmage a little bit. So it's an intriguing option. But I've forgotten completely about Max Johnson, and he has started some past 2 years. So there is a quarterback something or other happening in College Station, and I said, I keep forgetting about Max Johnson. Well, Mark told us that to this point, Max hasn't looked very good. Now, he's been working with the twos as well a lot. So that sort of is context, but all that does is give me some context. It doesn't explain it away or even mitigate it as, oh, okay, now I understand it. You know what mitigate does? Mitigate sort of takes away the responsibility. Context? Oh, okay, now I understand a little bit more. And even understanding more, I look at Max Johnson and say, you're supposed to be a starting quarterback in the SEC. And if you are a starting quarterback in the SEC, you know what you need to do? Elevate. But I'm working with the twos. Mm-hmm. And if you were starting quarterback, and let's just be brutally honest here, if you were starting quarterback at Missouri, for instance, Brady Cook, He's working with the ones. Do you know what he still has to do? Elevate. Well, I'm only working with the ones. Nobody said that because you in practice you think, well, yeah, I'm working with the ones. This is the best we got out here. What's Brady Cook going to be working with on Saturdays compared to the defense he faces, the twos? Hey, Brady's working with the twos today. What do you mean? Well, they're playing Georgia. See, Georgia's defense is the one. Florida's defense, I think, will be the one. Kentucky's defense, I think, will be the one. Missouri's offense, yeah, there are two. So, working with the twos, your job is to – Brady Cook's job is to, well, this is who you have, so go elevate. Go improve versus what maybe is expected. That's in a game situation. In practice, do the same thing, man. So, it's on Max Johnson. Got to improve. And we talked with Mark about that because that is one of the four remaining jobs in the SEC that has to be decided. Talked with Andrew Hutchinson about the Arkansas situation, and it's not one of the jobs that needs to be decided. They have at least four, I think three, but possibly four running backs and KJ Jefferson. So we talked with Andrew about that. Ira Schoffel's coming up in about 10 minutes. Ira Schoffel from warchant.com, managing editor there. We will continue to talk about, again, not a place where there's any sort of quarterback competition, but what can that offense kind of round into be? They could run the ball a little bit last year, planned and unplanned. They could run the ball, but you got to be able to move it downfield if you're anybody, especially for Florida State. And as we've talked about, and I'll ask Ira about this, maybe if it's changed or we think it is, have to wait till the beginning of the season, but there has been no go-to receiver, not one that you can look at and go, okay, it was supposed to be Tamorian Terry. It didn't ever really got to be that, certainly not consistently. So it's been a minute, man, and it's not supposed to be that way ever at Florida State, and it is. Speaking of places without a quarterback battle, Columbia, South Carolina, have Heath Klein on from 107.5 The Game, the flagship there, talking Spencer Rattler and the rest of that offense as they, again, continue to get a little deeper into their practice. If you ask one question, you can put into perspective how tough the past decade has been for the ACC. The question is, what's the next open SEC job? And take a second for that, by the way. What's the next open SEC job? I mean, you think of the next one, two, or three you want. And who in the ACC wants it? Think of it that way. Now, specifically, all of us right now, take 5 seconds, forecast in your mind the next SEC head coach opening or two or three. It's a casual thing, folks. There's no test. So wherever you are thinking throughout the SEC that might be the next most likely openings, Chuck, for whatever reason, what might those schools be? Well, there could be good, bad, maybe somewhere in the middle. Because if you say the Auburn job, I think the Auburn job is the next SEC. Dan, I want you to give me three schools in just a second. If you say the Auburn job, I say, well, yeah, I get that. Auburn, is Brian Harsin could have a tough season, and he's out. I'll just mention Eli Drinkwitz in Missouri. I could say Eli in Missouri. He's out. All right, so Auburn and Missouri could be the next two. What about if Kirby Smart decides, hey, I want to coach the Philadelphia Eagles? I'm just giving you a name. I want to coach the Eagles. Well, Georgia's open at that point. For whatever reason, I picked those three. Dan, you can have the exact same three, a combination. Just give me three schools who might be the next openings in the SEC.
Oh, Mississippi State.
All right.
I am going to go with not A&M, not LSU.
It could be. It could be Kentucky. It could be Tennessee. Josh Heupel could convert. I don't know. What did Cat Stevens do? Convert to, was it Islam?
Yeah.
And gave away all his stuff and moved somewhere? Maybe that's what Josh Heupel does, and he becomes Yusuf Islam now.
Ole Miss, if Lane decided something else was.
There you go. Somebody huge calls and says, Lane, we want you. Here's gargantuan money. All right, well, Lane leaves. Here's a stadium that seats 100,000. I'm gone. Ole Miss, tremendous choice. All right, how about Alabama? How about that? How about Nick Saban says, I'm 71 and I'm going to go in Garden, which I think is what he may do. Folks, if you're listening right and you came up, there are reasons you could come up. Brian Kelly looks around and says, my family doesn't like it here and we're going back to somewhere. Maybe that's what he decides. I don't know. I don't think it's going to turn out that way. Forecast. For whatever scenarios, Kirby goes undefeated, another national championship, and he's off to the league. Saban retires. Whatever. Forecast your next SEC head coach opening, or few. And then tell me which coaches in the ACC would want that job. Because I declare it almost doesn't matter which SEC jobs you have identified, and it almost doesn't matter which ACC coaches you are considering. I think almost every ACC coach would take almost any SEC job. Almost. Now, Mac Brown, see, you have to include the – because I'm talking like literally the examples we have here. I'm not just talking about a general straw man here, straw man there. Like Mac Brown, he ain't taking any other job. Notre Dame could call. I don't even know if he's Catholic. Notre Dame could call. Mac Brown's like, nah, I'm good. So some of them, they're not taking anything. But with the financial divide between these conferences about to widen even more and significantly – let's consider some of those answers again. With a couple of exceptions, folks, and I mean just a couple, an ACC head coach has to decide what his version of winning is, what trophy that includes, if any. Dabo, what's his version of winning? Well, that's a national championship. It really is. That's tough. That is a tough place to put the bar. Maybe when they get rid of divisions, I don't know. Maybe it's just winning the ACC and then making the playoffs. I don't know. But they're a national championship-seeking program. Like Florida State was, they're not. But with just a couple of exceptions, and like Dabo may be one of them because of where they set the bar here. In most cases, you have to decide if you're if you're a head coach in the ACC, if like being Dave Doran is good enough for you. And I don't say that with any sort of criticism, but if being Dave Doran is good enough for you, and it apparently is for him, then you stay in the ACC. But the days of ACC head coaches weighing openings in the SEC and passing, yeah, that's kind of done, folks.
went back in time, if I went back to 2007, just 15 years ago, just randomly spun the wheel and it landed on 2007. If you go back and look at the coaches in the ACC and the coaches and the jobs in the SEC, it was different. Do you remember Jim Grobe at Wake Forest? He told Alabama, "I'm not interested." He was the head coach at Wake Forest. He's like, "Nah, I'm good." If you remember David Cutcliffe, a couple of years after, I was just looking at the standings 15 years ago to see who were the coaches and were there any stories like this. There were multiple stories of ACC coaches looking at SEC programs going, nah. David Cutcliffe told Tennessee, "Yeah, I'm good." Absurd to think that that would happen. Do you know what you had 15 years ago? You had Bobby Bowden and Beamer in the conference. They weren't leaving for the SEC, not at that point in their career. You had a lot of coaches in the ACC that it's not, you know, theoretically I could say they weren't leaving. Frank Beamer wasn't going to leave no matter what. Bobby Bowden wasn't going to leave no matter what, and I really believe that that's accurate. It's also just Chuck's opinion. But beyond the ones that I tell you, oh, he wouldn't have left, folks, we had ones where guys were courted and they chose. Like, I can tell you, oh, I bet you this wouldn't happen, and then here are the cases where it actually played out that way. Do you know what you don't have? I think, and for Dabo, even the Bama job gets him. But I said almost any ACC head coach would take almost any SEC job. Maybe Mario and being at home, and maybe he kind of starts to build something, maybe. Everybody else? The Vanderbilt thing comes with an asterisk. And I don't even think they're looking to change anything. Clark Lee, because he, you know, played there and gets the culture, and maybe he's a good fit. I don't know. But you look all through that conference. Folks, there are a lot of – I think there are – I can give you three head coaches right now. I don't think the ACC team that employs them is going to employ them very much longer. If an SEC school called – And that goes to the final point. You know what you almost never see? And I mean, it is really, really like rare exceptions. And I've talked about a couple of them. But rare, and you have to go back. You don't have SEC like sitting in good stead, SEC head coaches leave that job for another college football head coaching job. Guy Morris left Kentucky to go to Baylor for some his personal connections, and this was early 00s. It's rare, man. You have ACC head coaches leave for other coaching jobs all the time. That is the reality of these two conferences right now. And it's about to get more pronounced. All right, we're going to take a break. Continue on this Thursday next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
We roll through a Thursday on the Chuck Oliver Show, and everybody's practicing. And the team we're going to talk about next, their head coach gave me just, it was an out of nowhere, just a warm fuzzy. Warm fuzzy good, cold prickly bad. A couple weeks back, we were coming back from break, and there was a clip of Mike Norvell. And I was like, wait a minute, I hear something in the back. Oh, That's a post-practice quote. And because they play week zero, Mike Norvell and FSU, they don't feel first. So that was a nice little bump when Norvell had him out there. But they are a week closer to playing than everybody else. And I relayed, this is maybe a couple of months ago, I think it was after spring, a pretty sobering conversation. I asked a buddy of mine who's a fan. I was like, who's the best player on offense? And I say quarterback is never an option because that's always the answer. And his answer was a transfer offensive lineman from Notre Dame. I was like, yeah, that's an issue. But the offensive line was better last year. They got some bad news. Caden Lyles, another transfer, is out for the year, I believe. I want to welcome on right now. We can talk about all this, and he'll know the answers. From warchant.com, it's his deal, man. He's the managing editor. It's Ira Schoffel. Ira, how are you, brother?
I'm great, Chuck. How are you?
Doing all right. Let's start on the offensive line. You can comment about if Dylan Gibbons is the best player on offense other than the quarterback, but talk about Caden Lyles a little bit because he was a kid that was going to start, I think, and he's out for the season?
Yeah, and that might have been the case last year. I don't know if it's the case anymore. They did bring in some transfers who were pretty talented playmakers, so we'll see on that. But, yeah, Caden Lyles transferred in from Wisconsin. A lot of people thought he was going to win the center job. FSU brings back a returning starter, Maurice Smith, who's a little undersized. So people were excited about getting Caden Lyles in, typical Wisconsin road grader type offensive lineman. But it had been a good battle. Maurice Smith's quickness is valuable in Mike Norvell's offense, a lot of the things they like to do in the running game. And it was still a battle, but Caden Lyles went down, and he is out for the season. It's a big loss for him because even if he wasn't going to win the starting job, it would have been awesome to have an experienced backup center and a guy who also could play guard if you needed him to. And he's gone for the season. So it's a blow. I don't think it's a crushing blow for FSU, but it's definitely a significant injury.
And not a lot of 275-pound or so centers in college football anymore. Not in Power 5 in ACC.
He's back. He's bulked up to about 288 now.
Oh.
So he's getting closer. He's not like quite what he was, but, yeah, he's still not a big guy.
You know what? Milkshakes and Cuban sandwiches. That's what I would – if I was in Tallahassee, that's what I'd have every single day. All right, well, let's move back to the traditional conversations. I say that quarterback's always the answer to every question, so I eliminate it. But let's talk about Jordan Travis because, according to the head coach, and like I said, FSU's been out there a week longer than everybody else, Jordan Travis has not been bad so far, not one day in camp.
I would agree with that. He is really good, I think, for most of the camp. Yesterday was exceptional. That was the best day I think I've ever seen from him. He just hit every throw and made some throws that we haven't really seen him make in terms of just really stepping into a throw with conviction. He doesn't, there's one knock on him as a quarterback, as a passer, I really think it's just he doesn't anticipate a lot of times, that he doesn't trust sometimes to throw the ball before the receiver's open. I think he likes to wait till the guy's open, and at that point, sometimes it's too late. But yesterday, he was throwing with anticipation, made some really big-time throws, and he's had a good camp. I mean, I think it's good for him to know he's the guy. Last year, he had the McKenzie Milton show going on in the background. The year before that, he was the backup. So I think this has been good for him, and I think he's going to play pretty well.
Let's talk about receivers, and there's a bunch of things we can talk about here. I think I'd relate a comment that someone had made to me last year that out of 14 teams in the ACC, he ranked Florida State's receivers 14th, and I was like, that's horrifying to me. But they brought in a bunch of transfers, and I apologize for not knowing, but Winston Wright was in that awful car wreck. What is the progress there?
Yeah, Winston Wright from West Virginia, he was the guy of the four transfers they brought in that most people were most excited about. He caught over 60 passes last year at West Virginia. Typical slot receiver, thought he would be a really important piece of this offense. Had the car accident in the spring, and he's out there every day, but still rehabbing, not imminent to return to practice. But we do think he's going to be back maybe midway through the season. If they're lucky, if things fall right, maybe they get him towards the end of the first half of the season. So we do think he's going to play this year, but not in these first few games.
Johnny Wilson, it's easy to comment about his size. He's 6'6", about 230, 225-ish from Arizona State transfer wide receiver. So he's big, but, I mean, you can just look at him and know that. How has he looked?
He has looked really outstanding. And he was here in the spring, and as you said, the size stands out, and he knows how to use his body well. He can kind of post up defenders a little bit when he goes into his routes. But in the spring, he struggled with some drops. He had a lot of drop passes. Didn't seem very comfortable or confident in the new offense transferring from Arizona State. But I'm telling you, he looks completely different right now. And I'm not saying he never drops a pass, but he has been outstanding. I mean, he's had several practices in a row now where it's just he's been the best wide receiver on the field. And then when you add into it, and it's not just the size. I mean, he's got speed. I don't know how he wasn't more productive at Arizona State. I like to think maybe that was just a product of the struggles they were having as a team and as a program. But he looks like a really nice player. Coming in, I thought he'd be an occasional weapon. Right now, he looks like he could be maybe their featured receiver.
All right. I understand how you win at the highest level of college football. You have grown men just game wreckers out there. But I do believe there is something to the bonding, the team aspect, the go bleed for your teammate. I believe that's real. Talk about those practices in Jacksonville. They're going away to have sort of a smallish camp.
Yeah, and that is a big part of what they're doing. And, I think sometimes fans roll their eyes and media will be sarcastic about some of those things, but I believe it's true too. And if you look back at Mike Norvell's Memphis teams, I thought the most impressive thing when I watched them was how hard they played and how they seemed to sacrifice for each other. You could just see it on the field, the way they played. They were so committed to each other. And Florida State really hasn't had that the last several years, along with some talent deficiencies. They're in Jacksonville for 2 days. It's going to be a challenging 2 days, not just the practices, which will be tough because, they have some amenities when they practice at home. They have an indoor facility they can go into to cool off. They also have these big ice-cold trailers where they go in to lower their body temperatures during practice when it's too hot. They don't have any of that over there. And they also the dorms they're staying in are, it's twin beds. It's not the player dorms that athletes live in today. So it's going to be a challenging couple of days for them. And they've had, it'll be in the middle of six straight practices, capping off with a scrimmage Saturday night. Mike Norvell thinks that at the end of this week, he'll have a good idea of what this team's really made of.
August practice in Florida is so hot, man. It is just awful. So you're talking about those freeze trailers and all that. Man, everything that you have that you're used to, and then you're just going to hit the field in Jacksonville, and it's going to be a sweat box, man. But there, I agree with you. There is value to it. Ira, appreciate you as always, brother.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right, Ira Schoffel again, warchan.com. Yeah, it's awful. And I'm talking about covering practice, by the way. Can I be real clear about this? Covering. Get out of the car and you're walking over there. You're like, oh, they're just still walking out on the field? Yeah, I'm going to go sit in the car during calisthenics again. All it is stretching. Oh, you know what? All it is. And then you wait. All right, I know period six is when they start contact. So I'm going to wait till I hear period six.
Well, there's also, too, sweating, doing all that, going back inside, and the air conditioning is on full blast.
It is. I always wonder if just like my arteries are just going to seize up with the change in the temperature and all. It is so tough to do that.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Oh, there were five. And then Eli christened Brady Cook, and now there are four places around the SEC where coaches are going. Something from Brian Harsin, hey, Robbie Ashford looked pretty good today, to Lane Kiffin going, yeah, I got nothing for you, really. I got nothing for you. One of those locales in the SEC without much mystery about the quarterback position, other than, really, they got him? And I'm not being snarky there, folks. South Carolina football has never, ever, ever, ever recruited a player like a quarterback like Spence Rattler. And so no mystery about who the starter is going to be. Mysteries about how that's going to unfold, what it's going to look like, what they're going to be able to do with the ground game, how the whole offense can be able to salt the SEC East and hopefully vault themselves to having a great 2022 season. I want to welcome on now a guy who talks Gamecocks every single day, 107.5 The Game in Columbia. It is Heath Klein. Heath, how are you, man?
Hey, Chuck. How you doing, man?
I'm pretty blessed. We're talking college football today. Let's talk Spence Rattler. I know what he can get done. I've seen it out at Norman, Oklahoma on various Saturdays. He can be 460 yards and four touchdowns and throw the ball 52 times. He's that talented, and it's legit. I mean, it's not hype or marketing or whatever else. What do you think that Shane Beamer and Marcus Satterfield want to get done with him?
It's going to be fascinating because, I mean, look, their offense last year was so hopeless. I mean, they just – I don't know what they would have been had Luke Doty stayed healthy. Maybe it could have looked more coherent early. They still didn't have a lot of answers at receiver regardless. But once they lost him, and you know, he tried to play through that foot injury, but when your best strength is mobility and then you have none and you're a freshman in the SEC, you know, it didn't look so good. So I don't know what it would have looked like last year regardless. But they had no coherent passing game at all. And so now with the receivers they add and a guy who can make any throw on the field you need him to, it opens up everything, and it's just going to be fascinating to see what this offense really is supposed to be, because last year it just, whatever that was, there's no way that's what they want to do. No one on earth would want to do that. The thing that's going to be fascinating too, Chuck, is I don't know if people realize this or not, you're talking about they don't get kids like this. They've never had an all-SEC quarterback. Not never had an all-SEC first-team quarterback. They've literally never had an all-SEC quarterback. And I was talking about this the other day on the show. It might be more likely that Spencer Rattler is a first-round pick than it is that he's an all-SEC quarterback because of how stacked the conference is this year. It's just kind of a wild year for him to be in this league.
Yeah, and you and I have talked before about the lack of NFL draft history at the position from South Carolina, and then they have a chance here, and it's the same thing. You know, first-team All-SEC, yeah, that's probably not going to happen, but he certainly is going to be an NFL guy. Talk about how dynamic they can be going downfield because they do have some returning, returning proven production, a little bit of that, but then they also have some just big intriguing targets, especially at tight end.
Yeah, I'm mighty interested to see how some guys that came in last year that really didn't get used much, how they could help this year. But, you know, the Juice Wells is the name to keep in mind. That's the kid from James Madison. Everybody seems to think he's going to be a major impact guy. Big numbers of James Madison and a guy who can stretch the field. What's interesting is if you look last year, South Carolina actually with Josh Van took lots of deep shots. His rate for deep shots was third in the conference when he was running routes. I'm not sure Josh Van, though, is the best guy to run deep routes. And so I think this year, the guy like Wells, you might see it. And also, Amarion Brown's a name most people probably don't know at this point, but had 7 touchdowns at Georgia Tech, transferred in, was very quiet last year, had some injury issues, but the dude can run. And now if he's not being asked to be a primary receiver, if he's a guy that maybe gets that, you know, fourth matchup with somebody, if you're going 4 or 5 wide, I'm interested to see what he could do, and maybe you can get some matchups he can win if he could stay healthy. And you mentioned the tight ends. I mean, look, Jaheim Bell is an NFL prospect for real, They barely used him last year, which is kind of mystifying, frankly. It's one of the biggest things that is a head-scratcher about that offense is how little Bell got the ball. Bell's a chess piece. You can put him in the backfield. You can split him out wide. You can put him just as a straight-up tight end. Between him and Stogner, you have 2 excellent weapons now at tight end. So, again, will they utilize them more effectively than they did last year, where Nick Muse got some balls, but really very few passes went to Jaheim Bell, and on a team that had no receivers other than Van to speak of, that was kind of hard to understand.
You remember Percy Harvin. You saw him up close. He looked like an MMA fighter. And so versatility was like, I don't know, 5th, 6th. He was really versatile, but that was way, way, way down the list of what he did. If we look at DeCarrion Joyner, where does versatility like rank on his? Like, what is he other than versatile? Like, because you like Kadarius Toney. I mean, like Anaya Smith. You look at versatile. I need that to be like 3rd or 4th on your list of what you do well.
Well, that's the thing. Before the bowl game, there wasn't anything you could point to that DeCarrion Joyner particularly did well. And it's not trying to rip the kid, but far as a receiver, he had just not developed. He had not been an effective route runner, not been an effective catcher of the ball. He's a guy who's an athlete, but they've just never figured out how to take that athleticism and convert it into production on the football field. And last year, suddenly in the bowl game with 3 weeks to get ready and a lot of reps at the quarterback spot, he became a real factor. When they had used him in the Wildcat, it was the same thing over and over. He always kept the ball, almost always ran left, and it was a useless play. So now, whether it's the confidence derived from that showing in the bowl game or that they make more of a priority to get him, you know, maybe you say instead of, oh, we'll put him in for a play or two, let's make sure we get him a series each game or something, they could get a lot more out of him, you know, based on what he showed in that game than what they ever have. And I think, again, this is an example of a guy who benefits immensely from the arrival of Wells, the arrival of Stogner, the arrival of Rucker, that you've got enough guys that no one now has to try and carry this team, try and be something that they're not. You know, Joyner is a complimentary player, a fifth guy that occasionally can do something for you, is a lot different than what he's been asked to do in the past, and it might make him a lot more effective.
I saw Javon Kinlaw wreck some games. I saw Jadeveon Clowney in a completely different way wreck some games, like really ruin some Saturday afternoons. Does Zach Pickens have that in him? Because he could have gone to the NFL, I guess, but I'm really glad for him he came back, I think. What do you think is his blue sky?
I don't think he's a game wrecker. I don't think he's built that way. I think he's a good, steady performer, but I don't think he's going to suddenly be a guy that people say, whoa, where'd that come from? You know, you never know. The guys do make jumps. The word on him was that the NFL said second, third round pick somewhere in there last year. Maybe he can get it to first round pick if he has a big season. Certainly he's motivated to do it. But I'm with you. I'm not sure I've seen the individual plays. Like sometimes a kid may not have the full game yet, but he just makes that play or two that you say, when he does figure it out, look out. Pickens really hasn't ever been that guy. He's steady. He's reliable. He'll do a good job, but I'm not sure he has that next gear.
And again, this is not being critical because, I mean, he's going to start in the SEC, I believe, but like Jordan Burch is even like a downshift from Pickens, isn't he?
Yeah, see, there's the guy who you feel like has more chance to be that flashy playmaker, that guy who could do big things. You just got to wonder when it's going to kick in. The thing with Burch that people may not realize about him, despite the five-star status, he's a kid that played at a much smaller level than maybe what you're seeing in SEC competition the typical kid is from. And I think there's been a longer adjustment period because of that. There's no question, though. The athleticism is there, and there's a lot of guys in this conference. If you look through the years, dudes who wound up being first-round picks that had very quiet first two or even three seasons. If Burch turned into that kind of guy, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know where he is right now. We got to see it on the field this year. But that's the guy where you feel like there's a lot more meat left on that bone.
How close to 100% healthy and able and everything else is Sherrod Green? I think he is one of those guys that could average like 14 tackles a game and nobody's going to know his name in December.
Yeah, Green's been around forever, and everything we hear is that he should be able to contribute this year. I would say that, you know, the experience is the best asset he's got. Green is not a guy that physically, I think, you look at and you say is your ideal SEC starting linebacker.
No,
been around as long as he has and just seen as much as he has, it can help. And so I do think they will be glad to have him back out there this year. And as far as we know, everything should be good to go week one.
Last thing for you, and I may be the only guy who asks you all year about Darius Rush, but he is not – like there are some guys like, I don't know, maybe, you know, Stingley started playing corner when he was six and played corner his whole life. Darius Rush has not done that. He's turned himself into a pretty decent ball player, though. Really good, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, the Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl actually specifically mentioned him as somebody that's on their radar as a pro prospect and somebody who's going to be potentially in that game. And for Rush to have come that far as a player from his very humble beginnings, that's a huge thing for him and for them. And that validation of having a guy like that saying, yeah, we're paying attention to that kid, that tells you something. So, yeah, they have – South Carolina has always seemed to have a knack for bringing kids along in the secondary, and this is another example of one that has really gone from being a guy that when he first showed up, I doubt anybody even thought he'd ever be a starter, to somebody who now, yeah, probably has a pro future, really nice piece for them in what's a much better situation in the back seven than it's been the last couple of years.
All right, last thing for you, and I'm not trying to insert some negativity here. I'm just trying to get a pulse on the fan base. You're there every day, you know. Week three, They're not beating Georgia. That would take a really, really unusual afternoon. I don't think they're beating Georgia. If week two at Arkansas is a loss, how deep into the season does the fan base stay engaged in this? Because there is a little bit of a window after that, but then you're right back into the deep fryer, Kentucky, A&M, et cetera, Florida comes up, Tennessee, Clemson at the end. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a schedule full of windows, and the first window was kind of a tough one.
Yeah, and I mean, look, the Georgia State game's not nothing. I mean, you know, talk to Tennessee about that. Talk to Auburn about that. Georgia State can make your life interesting, too. And Sean Elliott, he very much would love to find a way to win that game against South Carolina if he could. There's a little extra there for him. So, no, that first stretch is challenging. The one thing is, do they score points, Chuck? I mean, this team has just been borderline unwatchable on offense the last few years. If they can just be competitive and dynamic and entertaining, it's not that nobody cares if you lose. Of course they care. But they can handle the idea you lose a close game to the Hogs on the road, but you scored 31, or you know, you lose to Georgia in a shootout. They can say, okay, fine, maybe we can't beat Georgia yet, but I bet we can beat Missouri. I bet we can beat Kentucky. You know, that's what has to happen. You have to, for the fans to feel good, you have to at least give them something dynamic to be excited about. If somehow you go out there and it looks the same and you're scoring 17 or less, then, yeah, people will say, oh, Lord, here we go. So that'll be the thing. How do they look even if they don't win? How do they look as they do so?
All right. Now, I'm going to ask this because I said they're not beating Georgia, and you didn't really offer any pushback on that. What about Clemson? Where does that Clemson game sit?
I mean, you can't after last year, after the way that they got bageled in that game with the least effective Clemson team that they've seen in seven years. At this point, you can't talk about Clemson until you prove that you can be better than they are. But having said that, I mean, look, Clemson's got some questions here. We don't know whether or not DJ is the answer at quarterback, or if not, can they go to the freshman Klubnik and get it going with him? Dabo lost two coordinators that are really well-established national championship-level coordinators and replaced them with guys that have no meaningful experience at all in one case and no experience, period, in the other. Took no new players from the outside. I mean, they're banking everything on player development and staying healthy being their answer for all issues. And if they're right, hey, great, good for them. But there is certainly that thought that, hey, if he's not right, okay, maybe the gap gets a little bit closer. Maybe you could pull a surprise at the end of the year if things are really going poorly. But again, the game's in Clemson. You're going to have to prove a lot before anybody's going to buy it after last year.
All things Gamecocks. He knows it. Heath Klein. Thank you, brother.
Hey, Tom, Chuck.
All right, from 107.5 The Game, Heath Klein. So yeah, it's the good and the bad and the surprise, and we'll take it and let's move on. And all right, let's get started better than maybe we're thinking. That game at Arkansas is a big deal because even if you are saying that the Georgia game is very unlikely that you get that, just the quote upset on the road, figure out a way to score points, as Heath was saying, but just the upset on the road, do you know what that provides the opportunity for? A 4-1 start to the season. And then you start feeling yourself a little bit like, hey, wait a minute, we may be okay. And then Kentucky looks attainable. Already beat KJ Jefferson. Well, Will Levis, what's up with him? So it really just the entire, and how about this, going on the road at Arkansas? It's not going to be easy. That may be one of those, I've said Auburn hosting Missouri, what is that, week three maybe or week four? That could be a loser leaves town match. That is a pivotal game for both of those programs, Missouri and Auburn. I think for the entire season, what happens to them? South Carolina at Arkansas week two? Every scenario that involves something really good for Arkansas, any fan, media member, Sam Pittman, when he's in private, like, all right, shut the door, I'm going to play the win-loss game. All right, everything, okay, I'm going to whisper win-loss game on South Carolina. No, we got to beat them. Even Sam Pittman says it. Shane Beamer, play the win-loss game. Get yourself to a bowl. All right, well, Georgia State week one. Oh, week two, we have to win at Fayetteville. And then even maybe Shane Beamer would say, all right, Georgia, like, no, he's positive. All that. Shane Beamer would say, now that's going to be difficult. We're going to have to play a really good game that day. Then the next week, two weeks, got a chance. Change everything about their season. And like I said, nothing easy about going out there. All right, we're going to break, come back, wrap up the Chuck Oliver Show on this Thursday next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
I think it's really what we're trying to teach our guys is how to just be that way, regardless. Right? I think that's the whole idea of our football program, is how to teach people in our football program, coaches and players, how to be that way on a day-to-day basis.
Brian Harsin, Auburn head coach, wants the players to get an edge, keep an edge, play with an edge, run around, hit people. They are same as everybody else. It's usually the week before game week, because game week will pep everybody up. It's like a calendar-based Red Bull. You look, tomorrow's game week, and then you get a little bit of pep running around in practice because you hadn't played a game and beat on everybody yet. I mentioned for last week I was telling somebody this. Oh, I was in Memphis over the weekend. I was having a conversation with someone. I did some counting one time when I was coaching. And the last thing we did before game week, like before we actually turned and pivoted, all right, now it's the season, was we'd star the helmets. We had our logo was a star with SG, and so we'd star the helmets. And so you put the logos on because you don't want to rip up the decals during practice. So now it's game week. You got players show up on Monday. It's like, oh, it's game week. That's right. So we'd star the helmets. We were starring the helmets one time, and I counted the next couple of practices the next week leading up to the week one. And we had already practiced like 70% of the practices for the season. That's not fun. It's the same in college, same in pros, it's same in rec league. You have to do all of this stuff. And you know what happens just before game week? You get tired of it all. And you need a way to kind of, you know, pump up the crowd, get everybody back on board. And so that's what Brian Harsin is saying, trying to get his players to have an edge and then keep an edge. Dan, how's your day?
So far, so good. I mean, I think that not only with that, because you get to a certain point in practice where you're trying to battle the monotony of it all. I mean, it's everything from just, all right, well, more calisthenics. All right, here's more stretching. Okay, here is hitting a tackling sled. And you know what it kind of reminds me of? A few years ago, some people might remember Mike Nolan, a longtime NFL coach, defensive coordinator, everything above. And I remembered it was before the team he was coaching at the time was about to have a joint practice with another team. We don't get to do that in college football, but in the NFL, they, of course, have this. And he was talking about, you know, battling the weight of your opponent. He said, you go against your same guys, you pretty much know what that defensive tackle is going to do whenever he tries to come your direction, that defensive end, whoever it is. But then there's something different about not necessarily knowing your opponent and going with that. And I think that kind of feeds into what you're talking about right here, Chuck, is that, yes, you go through practice and it is, you know, if you're a tackle, all right, I know this edge guy, I know he's going to hit me with this move. I might know he's going to try to do this, or he's going to, you know, kind of hit and release and jump out in the coverage, whatever it might be. But then you finally, you know, it's kind of the next level of this is the film all of a sudden means that much more to you. And you are able to say, all right, hey, that's something different. I need to prepare for this. Maybe even ask the guy during scout team, hey, give me this look. That's what I need to see if I'm going to, you know, try to do my best to block up Dallas Turner and Will Anderson. So I think all of those things are definitely very valid points that you bring up there. Along with what we talked about earlier with Nick Saban and him being somebody now that it's amazing to think that whenever you ask him about offensive football, we listen a little bit closer. It's also, too, of being able to stomach certain losses within their program. So it seems like that JoJo Earl is going to be out for some time. There are years past that probably if there was a receiver the caliber of JoJo Earl was going to be out for some amount of time, you'd say, uh-oh, that's bad news for that position group. And I know that I believe that Cameron Latu has also been dealing with some injury concerns. But now all of a sudden, you look at a group for certain programs and you say, I trust it. Alabama is one of those programs that now with the wide receiver group is you've got the names, you've got the players that have come through there. It started with Amari Cooper, Julio Jones, and it's continued on with Jerry Jeudy and other players that we've seen come through those positions. That when you do have an injury to a guy like JoJo Earl, all of a sudden you just say, all right, yeah, you know what? It maybe makes them less what they were, but they're still a pretty darn good group right there. And you've got a guy like Jermaine Burton in that group now. You also have other people outside of the group that are going to be helping you in the passing game. I'm looking at Jahmyr Gibbs. So it's amazing to think how all this has come full circle from offense. Yeah, hey, they've got good athletes, but they didn't necessarily use those athletes to now, oh, they got great athletes, and they use them.
Amari Nyblak was the freshman I was trying to think of. I was like, no, not Amari. No, it was Amari. Not Amari Cooper, Amari Nyblak. He is a interesting athletic option there, tight end. Appreciate everybody coming on today. Mark Passwater from Rivals. Andrew Hutchinson, Talking Hogs. Today's Truist reporter, Ira Schoffel from WarChant.com. And Heath Klein, 107.5 The Game in Columbia. And everybody else joining us as well. Back tomorrow with more.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon Background Screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.